is the last talk in this room, and right afterward, we're having the closing ceremonies for the conference right next door in Manning. So right out that way to the left, and to the left again, and come enjoy the closing of yet another successful Hope. They're not going to simulcast it. You'll have to simulcast yourself into there. So astral projection is encouraged if you can do it. Also, just a really important reminder, after the closing ceremonies, we need to break the stuff down in here. We need to get it packed away. We need to get the hotel cleaned up, and we need all the help we can get. There are no cleaning staff that are going to help us. It's just us. So if you want to volunteer a bit after the conference, you know, it'll be obvious after the closing ceremonies who you can go up to, ask what you can do to help us out. We depend on that because, yeah, we only have two hands each, and yours are a valid addition. While he's enjoying my socks, I'll tell you that the next presenter is... This is a very interesting talk, and I'm glad we're closing the conference off with this. This is Jumping the Carbon-Silicon Boundary for Fun and Mostly Profit. Give it up for Tom Keenan.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I am a native New Yorker, but I moved away when I was 22 years old, so you can imagine that was a long time ago. But one of the things that I did was I learned to program here in 1964. I was a student at the Bronx High School of Science, but I didn't learn there because the darn school only had one computer, and it was very restricted who could get to use that computer. So I went down to NYU, of all places, where they had an Atomic Energy Commission computer. And I used to carry printouts with me that on the bus, you know, when people would all look at me, and I thought, I'm this real special guy. I've got these printouts, you know, 132 character, fanfold stuff. And now I realize they just thought, that's a creepy kid. We better sit on the other side of the bus. Now you walk through, you know, you take that same bus, and every little, you know, teenager's got his face on a smartphone, and they're all, you know, looking up sports scores. And as you all know, they have no idea how they're being tracked. They have no idea what's being done. And my premise is that they should know more. That's the reason I've written this book called Techno Creep, which I'll be signing copies of later. And the reason I think that it's going to get even more interesting, because that technology is going to move into our body. So obvious disclaimer, these views are mine, not my employer, which is a university, which couldn't have a view if it tried. And it's also not the views of my publisher, although they are very good people and probably share my views. They've also published Julian Assange's book and the Chelsea Manning trial information, and they have great books. So anybody know what that thing is? Yes, close. It's a Kurzweil reading machine circa 1976. And the opening story I wrote in this book was about how I first understood unintended consequences. I was a news reporter. Walter Cronkite had used this machine, which read to the blind, to do his sign-off for CBS News. This is Walter Cronkite. So I thought, well, yeah, I'm working for CBC Radio. I can make it say, for CBC Radio, this is Tom Keenan. And I wrote that on a piece of paper. And this thing was at the New York Public Library. I went up those big steps between the two lions, found the thing, and I had to do that. And then I interviewed the guy who was the keeper of it. And I said, you know, what do people, how's this work? And he showed me. I said, what do people bring in to read? And without a moment's hesitation, he said, pornography. And I said, why? Well, what are you talking about? The school book. He said, look, if they want to know about the American Civil War, they want a blind reader, you know, a sighted reader for the blind will read to them. They're bringing in Lady Chatterley's Lover and the Story of O and all that stuff. So that's when I kind of realized that technology could have a creepy, unpredictable side to it. And I followed it ever since. And that whole image of these tumescent guys sitting there next to the machine with their headphones on in the New York Public Library never really left me. I want to give you a definition of what I mean by the body here and also an attitude. So this is a page on crack.com that talks about aura photographs and how to fake them. The aura is a concept known to hippies and other new agers, and he then goes on to give explicit instructions on how to make convincing photos. Well, first of all, my definition of the body includes the aura, so we're going to have the things that are near to your body, touching your body, in your body, but also I have that same skeptical attitude about a lot of technology that this guy has about aura photographs. Let's start by giving praise to Kevin Warwick, a very brave man who in 1998 had an RFID RFID chip implanted in his arm. I asked him to send me some photographs for TechnoCreep of that. He sent me this. I did not use it because if you look at it, the angle from which it's taken makes Kevin look like he's getting an adult circumcision. Look closely at the photograph. He's not. He's getting the chip implanted in his arm. However, the circumcision maybe isn't too far off because I heard Kevin speak about this chip, and he said, you know, it's great. I can control this remote control arm, and he sent me a photo of the arm as well. And I actually saw him once do a transatlantic hookup with his wife, and I'll just leave it at he probably invented teledildonics on that very day because the wife was there, and we couldn't see her on camera, but we could see what Kevin was doing, and she seemed very, very happy about the whole situation. So that was indeed the dawn of teledildonics. We've come a long way since then. Of course, I can't see anyone, so this is kind of moot. But would you raise your hand if you have, or your real or your bionic hand, if you're already chipped? Are any of you chipped? I sat next to someone earlier in the week who was chipped. Anyway, the chip, the idea of an embedded chip caught on, sort of. There's a beach club in Ibiza that used it. I couldn't figure out why, and I watched the news report. It's pretty simple. They're wearing just about nothing. They have no pocket for a key or a credit card, so having the chip in there allowed them to walk around essentially nude, but also to get into the VIP area and to charge things. There was a U.S. patent issued in, way back in 91 called Method Enabling Dental Identification of Humans and Animals, in which a chip could be put just below a filling in your tooth. And there are these persistent rumors that Obamacare is going to chip us, that for some healthcare reasons we're going to need chips. Well, they're sort of true. Way, way back a few years ago, the FDA did approve computer chips to be planted in humans. And just to show you the size, next to a U.S. penny, something we don't have in Canada, and which Australia got rid of several years ago, but that next to a penny, that's what the chip looks like. We do it to our dogs. We do it to cattle up where I live in Calgary. Apparently, we're doing it to grandma down in Florida, too. A company called VeriChip, which is now turned into Positive ID, chipped 200 Alzheimer's patients in a trial down in Delray, Florida. And a couple of things happened. First of all, there was no security, so it was trivially easy to clone. So obviously, if any of you became grandma or grandpa, you would be making everybody have the same ID, and so there'd be thousands of you running around the store or the old age home confusing everybody. The nature of RFID is you have to chase the patients with a reader, and that wasn't really very good. There are stronger RFIDs. I was at a conference in Geneva that was quite humorous because they had RFIDs in a conference badge, not like these cheap, flimsy ones, and it was very highly secure, but beautiful, I should say, quite lovely. The ones in Geneva, they actually made you hold it up to a reader, and your photo came up. And the protocol was if you matched the photograph, you were let in. If not, there was a soldier who would shoot you. So it was, you know, a pretty high security meeting. And halfway through, a rumor spread that, in fact, these things were being read from a distance and that they were keeping track of who was meeting with whom in the halls and all that type of stuff. And the United Nations, which was running the meeting, called a press conference. And they said, basically, oh, yes, they are the whatever type 2 RFIDs, and we could read these from 10 meters away, but we're not doing that. So don't worry, we're not actually keeping track. But, you know, the reality is a lot of people feel that this is an invasion. There's a whole book by Catherine Albrecht called Spy Chips on how Walmart wants to put chips into us and track us. And it was what really kind of killed this project, and it is sort of dead now, is it got labeled by the religious right as the mark of the beast. Conspiracy theorists are pretty sure that Delray Beach firm is developing the Antichrist. Well, you know, once you call something the Antichrist in America, it ain't going too far too fast, right? So, you know, the reality is that the project is certainly slow, but it ain't over. First of all, parts of many of us, hopefully no one in this room, are already tagged. This is, in fact, a breast implant. Breast implants have RFIDs in them. Some do. Now, why do they do that? For the obvious reason that when you come into the hospital and you tell them you had a breast implant a few years ago, they need to know what kind. And there's really two ways. They can slice you open and find it, or they can do this. So it has advantages. However, you know, I have this scenario in the book that some kind of wild and crazy guy doctors take one of the readers out of the operating room, pop it in their jeans, and they go down to the local bar and start, you know, sniffing around. And that's the kind of thing that could happen. So just putting these chips in can be invasive. Designer jeans like Levi's have some of the very high-end ones have chips in the seam, partly for anti-counterfeiting and authentication, but in theory, if some rogue reader was sitting in your chair, you could be tracked. The key point about RFID, of course, is you don't know when you've been read. You know, you just walk by it and you may well have been scanned. But it's all kind of moot because we're chipping ourselves anyway. The average teenager today would rather leave their home naked than without their cell phone. I think if you gave them the choice, a lot of them would choose, I'll take the phone, Dad. And anyway, the IMSIs and all the information from your cell phone can be pulled out of the air. The United Kingdom had some spy bins that were tracking people who walked through the city of London. That has now been banned, but they were actually able, just from the phone, not to say who the phone belonged to and that they walked by. That would require talking to GCHQ. But the reality is they were able to find out that the same person walked by there at 2 o'clock every day. And anyway, I'd argue that with enough incentives, and I'll try to convince you of this, VIP access, discounts, whatever, many people, including you, would happily accept being branded and tracked. So here we go. First proof is the Antichrist herself. Flo from Progressive Insurance. Well, what does Flo sell? She sells all kinds of things, but the little thing that she's got on her hand there is the Snapshot, a device that's inserted into the OBDI port of your car and keeps track of your driving. I must tell you, as I explained in the book, it's really kind of a scam. It's usage-based insurance. Yes, you could get lower rates from it if you don't drive much, if you never brake hard, and also if you, in fact, don't drive at between midnight and 5 a.m. when there are a lot of drunks in the road, possibly including you. So if you go out there and obey all those rules, you might get a cut in your insurance. It won't cost you more, but as I was investigating this, I found out two things. After the Snowden revelations, the adoption rate of this thing went down. So a lot of people said, wait a minute, I'm like tracking myself? That's terrible. And the other thing is, it saved at least one guy from going to jail. And the story is, he put his Progressive Snapshot in, he drove for a month. It turned out, ironically, it didn't save him any money. He forgot that he had it, but he was then accused of murder. And in fact, he was able to prove by asking Progressive to produce the records of where he was that he could not have committed the murder. So that was the evidence that exonerated him. So there's at least one person who's happy. And I would say with a lot of these technologies, there's one person who's happy and 50,000 people who are screwed. So, you know, my favorite example, a nice woman in Ontario bought a lottery ticket recently and forgot about it. Kind of sad because it won $50 million. She gets a knock at the door, and her sister sells lottery tickets in a store. She thought they were investigating her sister. In reality, they were there to tell her that she might be the winner of this. How did they know? Well, they had her credit card record from that day, and they had a surveillance camera from the drugstore where she bought it. So most of us would go, oh, gee, they're keeping that surveillance footage around. She went, oh, great, I won $50 million. So sometimes things are good for some people and bad for others. Okay, insurers are highly interested in the very chip. The Blue Cross Blue Shield of New Jersey has been implanting chronically ill people to test them with this. And the next level is probably the Japanese smart toilet. These have been big in Japan. Many of the creepiest things I write about in the book originate in Japan, and we can only speculate why and how. But they do have a, you know, you can buy girls' underpants in the vending machine type of mentality. So the smart toilet by Toto has been around there for a few years. It's come to America. It does an instant urinalysis, instant blood pressure check, instant weighing of you, and that's fine, except who does it tell? And it can be rigged to automatically send the information to your doctor or to your insurance company. Why would you want your insurance company to have it? Because of Flo. Flo will come along and say, you know, we're now doing this life insurance, but you have to keep your blood pressure down. So every time you go to the toilet, we want to check on you. And that is not beyond the realm of possibility. How do I know? Because your Nike Fuel Band knows when you're having sex. So many people are wearing fitness monitors now, and it was revealed by Adam Clark Estes in a Gizmodo post that if you're a male and burn 150 calories, it's fewer calories for the female, actually, but a male burning 150 calories at 2:30 a.m. without taking a single step is probably only doing one thing. And the only question is he alone or with someone else, and is it the right person? Now, if that information was then shipped to, you know, your Facebook profile or your doctor or something else, it could get very interesting. So we do know now that your Nike Fuel Band knows when you're having sex. If I haven't got you yet for why you might want to be implanted with a chip, there's this whole thing called recreational marijuana. Well, yes, it turns out they only want to sell that to people, in particularly in states where it's medical marijuana, who are authorized to buy it. So there is a suggestion of a green machine that will automatically check your chip and make sure you are the authorized vendor. So the reality is, I guess what I'm getting at is, if I keep raising the ante and give you more and more incentive, like recreational marijuana, you might want to go there. Another possibility, I know most of you don't care about your jobs, but if you did, you might need to sort of be branded to actually keep your job. This is Regina Dugan, who used to run DARPA and works now for Google via Motorola. And she gave a straight-faced speech, which I was amazed by, in which she said, well, I have this tattoo of magnetic ink. That's going to be my password. I can't remember all these passwords. But anyway, she said, we'll start to swallow password pills. So every day you would get up in the morning, and before reporting for work, you would take the pill, and that would identify you to the computer. And most people gave her the finger, right? So this wasn't exactly a popular idea to put something like that in your body. But if I told you that if you want to be an executive at Google or some company like that, you got to take the pill with the Kool-Aid, you probably would do that. If I still do not have you, I will make one last try to convince you you want this. And here she is, adorable little child. I mean, how could you not love this child? When this child grows up, thank you, Photo Bucket. When this child grows up, you are going to find that this child wants to go to one and only one place, the creepiest place on earth, a Disney theme park. Disney theme parks have tunnels under them with little teenagers who come up and pick up all the garbage. They have tunnels that have characters in them. It is alleged that occasionally the characters do rude things under each other's costumes. Stuff happens in those tunnels. They're called the Utilidors. However, on top of Disney, they now have something called the My Magic Band. How does this thing work? You go there, you pay the money, they sell you this band, and it gets you into the park. So it's your ticket. But it doesn't stop there. It also tracks you through the entire park. And so that little girl, let's call her Sally, has come with you. You're holding her hand. Her little tiny wrist has the magic band on it. And then suddenly, Minnie Mouse is appearing on the horizon. And Minnie gets on her iPad. Sally is approaching now. Her favorite character is Minnie Mouse. Her remaining spending limit for today is $43. So underneath from the thing comes the $40 jumbo Minnie doll. Because the reality is that they know all about you. If you're on the Disney property, they track you. The other thing about it, though, is that you don't have to get it. It's something that I call de facto mandatory. And the reason is you can still get a paper ticket. You can tell little Sally, like, we like our privacy. We're going to get paper tickets. And you do that, and you get in the park. However, when you're in the park, you're totally screwed because you don't get the priority on the lines. You can't jump lines. So now you're explaining to Sally, now, Sally, that family over there gets to go ahead of us, and we're getting on this two-hour line because we really value our privacy. It's just not going to wash. Sally is going to give you the finger even at the age of five. I understand that at DEF CON this year, there will be several people who will be reverse engineering the wristbands and presumably selling some that give you lifetime access to all Disney theme parks. So stay tuned for that. Anyway, in researching Disney, I discovered the biggest thing of all, why no one ever farts at Disney World. There's a patented machine called the Smellister. That's a photo of it. It doesn't look like much, but it's the reason that you only smell cookies when you walk down Main Street, USA, because they bake the cookies off in a factory somewhere, but they pump out the cookie smell. And when you go on the haunted house, they pump in the musty house smell. And Pirates of the Caribbean has the sea smell, and on and on and on. And of course, farts don't stand a chance against those smells that are constantly being belted out by something that is actually called the Smellitzer. That's what the Disney people call it. In looking at this, I found that the whole world is being manipulated. We're being led around by the nose, even in funeral homes. The next time you have the misfortune to go to a funeral, hopefully not your own, take a deep breath and you will smell cinnamon, because almost all funeral homes cover the not very pleasant odor of decomposing flesh with cinnamon. Sports arenas use it widely. The St. Louis Rams, most people deny. Most companies deny using this technique. The St. Louis Rams admitted it and said, not only did we do it, but when we pumped the smell of cotton candy into the whole arena, our concession sales went up, not just for cotton candy, but for hot dogs and drinks and everything else. It's known that the Barclay Center in Brooklyn has a signature smell that they pipe out to cover all the sweaty people from New Jersey who are coming in there going to games. Sorry. Nightclubs. A number of nightclubs have custom smells. There was a premiere of the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They have a special chocolate smell. Even Holiday Inn, not the classiest. Probably a lot of you are staying at Holiday Inns. But anyway, the reality is it's not the classiest, but they figured this out too. When you have a wedding, they pump in the smell of roses. When you have a business meeting, they pump in leather. And speaking of smell, there's a lot in the book, a whole chapter called Sensor Creep. Like, the chapters are simple, nice simple titles. Camera creep, sensor creep, and so on. Well, part of sensor creep is urine. I mean, let's face it. Somebody once told me if the people with urinary incontinence were stretched end-to-end, they would reach three times around the world. Babies, teenagers, adults, and so on. A Spanish company called Siempre Secos now has a sensor that goes in the diaper to alert care staff or parents or whatever when baby is wet. And in fact, there are sensors everywhere. Which brings us to something some of you may have seen, that your behavior is being tracked. When you go out and buy something on Amazon, it always suggests other stuff. I discovered, and I grabbed the screen capture, that if you selected Call of Duty 3, you also were offered adult reusable cotton diapers. And there's a correlation there for a reason, right? So they don't do it anymore. Now they go remarkably. They choose the word remarkably. We have no other product to suggest for you, right? But cotton diapers and Call of Duty seem to go together. Soon when you walk into a store, your behavior will be targeted by smart shelves that will decide that that woman there is a fat woman, and therefore the price on the Oreo cookie should be modified, possibly in the upward direction. And the slim woman on the left may find some other things. They actually, by 2016, will have smart shelves in grocery stores. They don't identify your face, though they probably could by then, but they go out there and they actually track your body mass and, of course, your gender. Which is no problem at all, because there's already an app called SceneTap. Has anyone used SceneTap? Oh, you're dirty if you did. SceneTap is a way to check out a bar. This happens to be a bar in Boston called the Beantown Pub, and find out the current population in it, how full it is it chilling or hopping or whatever, and what is the gender ratio? So if you're a guy, you don't waste your time, unless you're gay, going down there to meet a lot of other guys. So you can get the average age. How the F do they do this? They put five cameras up in the bar, they capture images, and they have processing software that allows them to deduce, not with 100% accuracy, because sometimes I can't tell when I'm a human being. Is it he or she? You know, Arthur or Martha. But the reality is they're pretty good at deciding are you a male or a female and posting that information. And, of course, they got to monetize it, so they also tell you about the drink specials today. So that's the app called SceneTap. The newest vulnerability, of course, is your face. There's a company called NameTag, and their PR stuff says, our app will allow users of Google Glass and smartphones to capture images from their live video, scan them against photos from social media and dating sites, including more than 450,000 registered sex offenders, just the kind of people you'd like to meet. But in reality, that's what it does. It allows you to look at somebody's photo and now run them against the registered sex offender database. But in the future, you know, Facebook. So you walk down the street and, oh, who's that guy? Oh, Sam, yeah, how's your wife, Sally? You know, and you're looking up into the Google Glass. So this is coming along, but of course it comes at a price. Girls Around Me was called the taking creepy to a new level by the New York Times simply because it did something very interesting. All young people seem to have this fear of missing out. They want their friends to know where they are at all times. So as a matter of fact, they go into bars and they check in on Foursquare. A number of people have poorly secured Facebook profiles. Girls Around Me united the two, and you could walk up, take your phone and go, oh, she's kind of cute. And I see she's not in a relationship. And her favorite band is the Bare Naked Ladies. And her name's Sally. I'm going to go, hey, aren't you Sally? So the point about that and why it's creepy is the power imbalance. So I actually have a chapter in the book that I worked long and hard on developing a theory of creep. And one of the things about the creep is that if you don't know what's happening to you, it's creepier. Also, if it's unpredictable, it's creepier. I mean, you have to pay your taxes every year. That's nasty, but it's not random, not unpredictable. It's going to come every April 15th. But the reality is that things that come out of the blue that you don't understand strike us as creepy. who has your face? The government has a huge database, every passport, every visa, every denied visa. Facebook, probably the largest private collection. And then as we learned at this conference, or I learned at this conference, there are perverts out there like Steve Rambam who collect photographs just, you know, because he's creepy, right? So he said he's got several million of your Facebook photographs. Well, I collect them too. So here's a guy who posted his taking a bath at Burger King. Okay, his name is Jaron. And the point I'd like to make is great. You know, he got fired. All the employees at that Burger King got fired. He went on to become the spokesperson for an adventure travel company. So he actually had a career upgrade as a result of this photograph. The woman who did the Queen of the Sky blog, who was fired by Delta Airlines, has a new career in movies that you probably don't want your children to watch, and I'll leave it at that. Okay, speaking of things you don't want your children to watch, Chat Roulette, another great source of photographs. You're all, I know, wheezing or thinking now, oh my God, he's going to show penises, because that's mainly what you see on Chat Roulette. However, I'm not. I'm showing you one of my favorite captures. You say, WTF are you? And he says, a cat. And then the conversation ends, because there really is nothing else to say to this man. Right? Creepiest thing I've... Nah, many creepy things. One of the creepier things I found is people's... children's photos being appropriated for virtual adoption. If you want to adopt Instagram kids, follow me. First person to comment on this pic gets the baby. And then they do, like, online stuff, online breastfeeding. I don't know how that works. Anyway, the woman whose baby this is contacted the Hamilton, Ontario newspaper and said, duh, you know, that's my baby. That's Allie. She's not up for adoption. Of course, law enforcement has your photos. In the United States, where sheriffs often are elected officials, they show they're doing their job by posting information. So Sheriff Allen down in Florida, Hernando County, posts all the sort of seedy-looking people he's arrested this week and what they did and their real names and their real birth dates, and it stays up there for 90 days or, in my presentation, forever. But I caught him. I watched his files, and I caught him once doing this. Okay, so I've sanitized this a bit now. Drew on the eyes and changed the name a bit. But little Bobby here was arrested in 2010. He was born in 1997. I'll save you doing the math. He's 12 years, 2 months old, and his real name and photograph have been posted. So that's obviously stepping over the line, and that kind of stuff shouldn't happen, particularly if he winds up in this database. You know, big industry in the United States, very hard to kill. They say that they're doing this as a public service, that we want people to know that these people have been arrested. And there's famous ones, you know, you can see the ones who are up there. However, they're not that public-spirited, because the reality is for $499, they will unpublish your photograph. Or for $499, they will permanently publish someone's photograph. And I can't get an answer as to what they do if they get conflicting requests like that. Okay, I want to talk about genetics, because it's really cool. You can send your, if you don't know who your daddy is or want to know who your daddy really is, you send your DNA away to a company like 23andMe, and you get the results back on the internet. It's down to $99. You can even, if you're here in New York, there's a mobile truck that goes around, and this guy is about to create a reality TV series on the stuff that he's discovered in his mobile DNA drug and paternity testing truck. And his real story is that he couldn't afford an office, but he had an RV, so that's why he does it this way. But his TV show is going to be called Tales of the Swab. Why do we worry about DNA? Well, first of all, your whole family history is in it. That somewhat bizarre company called Ancestry, which we all know is run by the Mormon Church, more or less, and lives in Utah, they have 6 billion records on people. And you can sign up for free for Ancestry. Again, I won't ask you if you've done it. You get, for the first 13 days, you can use all their files for free. And then on the 14th day, they'll bill you. But if you cancel, it's free. But they don't give back your data. So they've got your family tree forever. That's how they get 6 billion records. They go to public records and people who contribute it. They've been offering a genetic genealogy, so you can trace yourself back to Adam and Eve or Joseph Smith or whoever you want to be tracked to. And by doing that, they basically get your DNA. And I would be very careful who I gave my DNA to, particularly if you are a male and have ever donated semen. And that's a business that people do sometimes. And I can tell you that there is now a technique. A 15-year-old boy was able to find his sperm donor father solely from DNA information and without the father ever having given up his own DNA. And the reason is he had some circumstantial information, like where he went to school. He had his own DNA, of course, and he was able to find other men who had the same surname as his father. And eventually the phone rang, and it's, "Hi, I'm 15, and it's time to pay for college soon." Well, the reality is that that could happen. There is a sperm donor in New York who has apparently 293 children running around out there. His semen commands a premium, as it turns out, because parents who have used it, mothers who have used it, want their siblings to be genetically related, so they actually bid on his bodily fluids, which are kept like fine wine in refrigerators. And there is actually a trade in human semen, if only because if you're in Cleveland, Ohio, to pick on a city, you don't want everybody getting inbred there, so you got to trade some with, you know, California or something. So there actually is a whole creepy world. But I did find one sperm bank that has a selector, so you can go, I want to know the race of the donor, I want to know the education of the donor, you know, PhD or whatever, and you can even submit a photo like Brad Pitt. So I submitted Brad Pitt, and it gave me some supposedly lookalikes. It didn't actually show me their photo, so I had to take it on faith. So being a good computer scientist, I specified should also be Negro, and at that point, they were African-American, I guess they said. At that point, they said, we don't have a really good match for you. So it is doing something, we just don't know what. Why is that woman in love with her printer? I put this in because there was a great talk, I don't know how many of you heard it, on biohacking. And the young people, I was going to call them kids because one looked like he was 12, but the people who did that talk last night, who I have a lot of respect for, are kind of like we all were when we were first getting computers. Anything's possible. Well, yes, anything's possible, and you can print something that will wipe out the world. You know, let's be careful about that. So the reality is that it's getting quite consumer friendly to mess with DNA just as it is with 3D printers. I didn't write in this book, maybe I'll write another book about DNA hacking. I did write about 3D printers. Okay, so obviously there's the gun. I mean, now there's much better ones, metal sintering ones. But, you know, he was the pioneer. That's the guy from Defense Distributed. But then I thought, let's get into the bio realm. So I called a wildlife sanctuary in Arlington, Tennessee, who had a duck whose foot was backwards. And they turned it around surgically. Actually, they amputated it. And they made a 3D printed foot for this duck whose name is Buttercup. And I think I spent an hour on the phone negotiating the rights to the photograph of Buttercup. So Buttercup appears courtesy of the Feathered Angels Waterfowl Sanctuary in Arlington, Tennessee. And I thought, you know, that was a good day's work, but what else can I do? So I called a buddy here in New York who runs a company called Maker Love. Maker Love is a repository of open source sex toy designs that you too can make on your 3D printer and be spared the embarrassment of having something come in the mail that you don't want to have come in the mail. Anyway, I said, look, what do you got? He said, oh, you know, I got the dildos, I got this, I got that. I said, no, I got to have something like for the book, I got to have something special. He said, well, we did recently have a contest, okay? We have a vibrator cover that has Sigmund Freud's head on it, and that's a standard item for us. But we said, let's pick somebody else, somebody new. So my book is the only one to have Justin Bieber dildo in it. That is the head of Justin Bieber as realized, and you can download the plans for that, and you can have, and I had to interview him, and I said, do you actually think people want to masturbate with this? And he said, I think there's an ironic element here, Tom. Remember Furby? Okay, Furby, great little story. Not really too relevant to this talk, but let's tell it anyway. In the book, I have the letter from the National Security Agency that says all recording devices, including toys, especially Furbies, are banned from our building. It is true the NSA banned Furby. Why? Because they thought that Furby would go and listen, because Furby's key proposition was that it came speaking only Furbish, but then it learned English as you touched it. And one great blog post said, as a matter of fact, you could read the thing Portuguese porn for 2 days and it would still say, pet me more, or some word like that. And someone disassembled a memory and discovered it knew 200 words. 100 words of Furbish, like mamieo, and 100 words of English, like more, 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 and things like that. Basically, the NSA didn't seem to, I don't know, they didn't have any Furbies, they don't have any technical expertise, maybe, I don't know. For some reason, they couldn't figure that out, so they banned Furby by this official memo from their premises, because Furby was gonna tattle. One thing about Furby, and the reason he's actually here in this presentation, is he's come back as Necomimes. So Nekomimi's, notice, you know, the secret parallel between the two. Nekomimi are brainwave cat ears that, of course, come out of Japan. And their promotional video, which you can find online, shows a young girl like this, and she sees, except she's Japanese, and she sees this attractive-looking man going by, and her ears erect immediately, and then he ignores her, and her ears flop down again like this. So Nekomimi basically communicates some brainwave information to show if you're aroused. A more, we had to have equal time, men, woman here. So here's a guy wearing the NeuroSky headset. And you can say it's pop neuroscience, you can say it's junk neuroscience, but there are people going around actually doing this kind of interpretation. There are games that can be played with your brainwaves and so on. And in the book, I'm very circumspect about the word on the bottom, wireheading, except all you need to know is that word. There are people out there who are applying electricity to their brains, and you know, just be very careful if you do that. I have a scenario in the book about the 50th anniversary Woodstock concert. And basically I say in the book, well, you know, Woodstock, I didn't make it to Woodstock. Our car broke down on the way, but that was 69. And in 2019, there'll be a 50th anniversary concert up in the same place. I said, the first problem you're going to have is all the robot, you know, cameras, the drones flying in front of you that people have launched because they're basically disposable. I said, but if you go down to the medical tent, it won't be, as it was in 69, problems with chemicals. It will be problems with electricity. People will be stimulating their brains and messing it up. And I did actually interview a great medical expert, Leroy Hood, and he said, by 2019, we'll be able to take a drop of your blood, sequence your DNA, give you specialized medicine just for you. Oh, and by the way, you won't be able to run out on the medical bill because we'll have your DNA, right? So I want to tell you how artificial intelligence plays into all this. For a brief shining moment, Coke had a virtual representative. Why did Coke have a V-rep? Because they were getting tired of phone calls at their switchboard in Atlanta, Georgia. Hello, I'm from such and such a school. I'm doing a report on Coca-Cola. Is it true it contained cocaine, whatever, codeine? When was it founded? So they got tired of those calls, so they automated it with Hank. So you could ask Hank friendly questions. However, sometimes you could ask him challenging questions. One of my friends said, Hank, do you like snorting Coke? He replied, of course. I like all the products of the Coca-Cola company. And then someone was smart enough to say, are you a Mormon? And he answered, we are not in a position to comment on the ownership of stock. However, the Mormon church is not among those who hold more than 10%. Why did he say that? Because Hank was a bot that was programmed for frequently asked questions, one of which is, does the Mormon church own Coca-Cola? Which apparently it does not. So, you know, the reality is, poor old Hank eventually got pulled down, and now, only those with very good eyesight can read this, and I'm not going to read it aloud, okay? But those in the front row got it. You'll have to buy the DVD if you want to get in on that one. Today, Hank is a pale shadow of his former self. He's a frequently asked questions page. He still says, I'll be really glad to answer your question, and if he can't help you, he'll let you know how disappointed he is, which leads us to the basic fallacy of AI, which is that this thing can't be disappointed at all. This is Bina, Bina 48 to be exact. Martine Rothblatt, who used to be Martin Rothblatt and started Sirius Satellite Radio, is an eccentric entrepreneur, designer, artist, whatever, and has created a very lifelike face made of rubber, or frubber, actually. And you can see from the back that Bina's, you know, got mechanical stuff. And Bina carries on conversations. And the New York Times, having no better news to cover, sent Amy Harmon up there to interview Bina. So there's a photograph of the interview with Bina 48 up in Maine. And Amy apparently at one point got quite seduced because Bina looked her in the eye and said, Amy, what's it like to be a reporter for the New York Times? And she said, oh, you know, you're looking at me, you're relating to me. And then Amy said, and then Bina said, if you want, I can play a game with you. So, you know, clearly there was no thought going on, but there's that fallacy that there's thought going on. So I want to leave some time for questions and discussion, give you a few conclusions, though. Don't assume anyone is your friend. You probably knew that already. I just have to say that because you have to say that. Invasion of privacy really begs whether we have any privacy. Well, we've learned here in the last few days, cast a lot of doubt on that. Let's put it that way. Be very careful posting anything because you can never get it back. And I'd go wash that water glass because there's something called touch DNA. I haven't been able to document that. Apparently Madonna has a full-time handler, or as we call them in Canada, fart catcher. And this fart catcher runs around collecting glasses that her lips have touched so that somebody doesn't culture her DNA and clone Madonna. May or may not be true, but, you know, touch DNA is real. I have a scenario in the book that in the future you'll go into a store like Target, you will type on the keypad, and the keypad will then vanish, like those toilet seats that revolve and give you a fresh one, and they will sequence your DNA, and the next time you come, they will say, oh, hello, Mr. So-and-so, Miss So-and-so, we did your DNA sequencing, and you're pre-diabetic, didn't you? You didn't know that, did you? So here's a special coupon on our pre-diabetic medicine or whatever. Is that going to happen? Well, Target, I have to tell a little side story here. Many of you may know it. Target knew a girl was pregnant before her father did. How? Because they were tracking her purchases, even though she didn't have a Target Red card. They just tracked her credit card, or dad's credit card, and they knew that she had bought some things like unscented lotion and so on that women who are pregnant often have. So they started sending her ads for things that were good for pregnant women, baby carriages, things like that. And what happened? Dad found out. Dad found the ad, stormed into the store near Minneapolis and said, hey, my daughter is 16 years old. You encourage her to have sex and have babies? A week later, Dad calls back and he said, there were some things going on in my house I didn't know about. She's due in August. I'm sorry. Now, Target could have reacted by going, oh, that's nice. But instead, they apparently, and this is in an article in the New York Times by Charles Duhigg, they decided, yeah, it's creepy. We shouldn't be creepy. What can we do to not be creepy? Ah, okay, we got it. So they started mixing in ads for power tools and barbecues into the baby flyers. So she would now get it and leaf through it and go, oh, they have barbecues. I don't care about. Oh, look, they have baby carriages and prams. And they did this because when a child, woman, whatever, is about to have their first baby, they, in fact, are worth a lot of money to Target. And the money quote in Charles's article was, as long as she doesn't realize that we're doing it, it's not creepy. Well, my goal is to make sure that you realize that they're doing it. I want to close with the moral of the story, which is be nice or else. There is still a website out there called Dirty Phone Book. You can put any 10-digit number in there, and you can say whatever you want. I had to censor some of the comments here, but most of them are rude comments. Luckily, this is gone. This is a map of my city, Calgary. All of those red houses are rotten neighbors. How do we know they're rotten? Oh, there's one good neighbor. That's the Calgary Flames hockey team. Go Flames. But the reality is we know this because people have had posted on rottenneighbor.com, you know, vindictive neighborhood beezy, watch your kids around this trailer, you know, things like that. And there's no policing. It's total vigilante justice out there. So that is kind of the world that we live in. When you combine this with all the biological stuff that I just told you about, it gets a little creepy. There was a fellow at DEF CON 2 years ago who showed how his implantable insulin pump could be taken over and controlled wirelessly. Now, he left out some key details, but I still think, you know, DEF CON is 14,999 really smart people and one jerk because he, you know, called a press conference to demonstrate this. But the reality is more and more equipment is being enabled, and they don't always think about it. When they put that wireless control in there, they go, yeah, we'll put that Bluetooth on there. That'll be fine. Well, if you're designers of systems, you want to think about it. And mostly we're all going to have to make choices. This is a real apocryphal, but I think real ad. Free to good home, beautiful six-month-old male kitten, orange and caramel tabby, playful, friendly, great for family. Or handsome 32-year-old husband, personable, funny, good job, but doesn't like cats. He says he goes or the cat goes. Call Jennifer, come see both, and decide which one you'd like. Why do I show you this? Because of a lesson I learned from Alan Alda. I heard a talk by him recently, and he said, when they really want a lesson to sink in some primitive cultures, they pick a local 6 or 7-year-old kid who can't swim and throw him in the river. And then everybody gets quite agitated and occupied, and then they tell the story that they want to tell. So I hope that you remember the key story that every time we use a piece of technology, every time we vote for a politician, every time we fart, every time we do anything, we are making choices. Okay, and those choices need to be thought through. And it's not easy. Okay, it's not getting any easier, but that's why we're all here, because we're smart. That's my contact information. We have a few minutes for questions, and thank you very much. about let there be light. Do we have a little bit of question time here? We do, yes. Yeah, please come to the mic. Yes.
So I'm not sure how within scope this is, but it looks like you did a lot of research in a pretty broad area.
Yes.
So a conversation earlier this weekend, we're asking, what happens to your implants in your body after you pass away?
Yeah.
Including, you know, electronics are getting more and more complicated, so they're both toxic and contain a lot of information.
Yeah, I think my understanding is they're incinerated, okay, that basically they go with the body, yeah.
So even like creepy chemicals like lithium batteries, you think they just go in the oven?
That's my guess. I mean, you know, unless there's a protocol and I've never seen it, I think that's where they go.
Hi, my name's Jeff. I'm a fellow Canadian. Thanks very much.
Yes.
I throw you out a fun one because it's been 10 years I've been working in real-time location systems and everything creepy that you've talked about. The previous startup I was working at was doing essentially Google Street View Live, where you'd stick a camera in your window, film a public area, and have that shared, which was a lot of fun. And the startup I'm at right now, I'm carrying actually two radio identifiers on my badge, one of which is Bluetooth, so anyone with a decent phone in the room can find me. I'm shamelessly self-promoting, is what I call it. And another one, which is in proprietary radio, which is a little bit more subdued and harder to find. What I wanted to ask then is really, what I found working in this space, and I think of myself as a good ethical Canadian, is that as long as you're giving people good value and there's, number one, excellent transparency in what you're trying to do and what you're doing with the data, that generally people will respond well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious of your thoughts there.
If they know. I mean, there's a great film, Terms and Conditions May Apply, that says that you're worth $500 a year to Google. If you use Gmail, YouTube, G Drive, they sell you to the equivalent value. And one might think that there's an option to give them $500 and not have them do that, but there's not. And that's what's creepy, right? And as somebody pointed out yesterday, even when you delete a piece of mail in Gmail, it's still sitting in the all mail folder. When you take Facebook strips off the location data if you happen to send a photo with location data, so when it's posted, it's not there, but they have it.
Yeah, I think the challenge there is people have been trained to want free things.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can put on the table very clearly what the value to Google is versus what you might pay, then it's possibly interesting.
So staying with the Canadian, the University of Alberta has moved to Gmail as a default provider, and their students' mail is not read by robots. And Google agreed to that, and for free, on one condition, that when the students leave, they'll still be Gmail customers. So they basically keep them as a customer.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Hi, Tom. Ed, I got to meet you right before the talk here.
Yeah.
I had one brief statement and one brief question. I just wanted to defend, you know, Hope in 2600. We have done a lot with RFID badges, including the last index, open, releasing an open source. So I just wanted to get that on record.
For those who don't know, badges are a thing at DEF CON, right?
And my question for you was, in your book or through your research, I happened to join a military branch as the year of 1994. And there was always rumors at that time that when you got your wisdom teeth taken out, that something was implanted. I don't know if it was RFID chip exactly, but it was pretty much a common thing we talked about, and when we get that headache, oh, yep, that's it.
Yep.
Just wanted to know in your research, is there any truth to that?
I've never seen a documented case. They show up on X-ray. Like if you looked at the breast implant, you could see it on X-ray. So as far as I know, they don't have one that can't be detected.
So they didn't take my wisdom tooth out and chip me.
Hmm?
They probably didn't take my wisdom teeth out and chip me at the same time. Without me knowing.
Go get an X-ray.
All right, thanks a lot. I blame them for this.
Yeah.
Hi there. I am a glasshole.
Oh, good. Yes. Welcome, glassholes.
This is a subject that I guess is a little relevant. I get into debates often about the camera on glass specifically. You could divide people with glass into kind of two camps. You have people who are very, very adamantly pro-camera, and you have people who are ambivalent. Okay. The ones who are pro-camera say that people think it's creepy now, but the societal norms and the way people act and the way people perceive stuff will change over time.
What's that on your arm?
It's a smartwatch. Okay. I suspect that we'll eventually hit some hard limit. That there might be some level of creepiness that's baked into the human or primate condition. What does the research show?
Okay, so what you have to think about, I have in the book the first crime and first arrest recorded on Google Glass, and it was posted instantly to YouTube. And what's interesting about it is it's a takedown of some drunk in Atlantic City. And the video was like 2 minutes, 14 seconds long, and in it, you see hundreds of people. You see children. You see people who probably, you know, are mafia figures who don't want people to know they're in Atlantic City. So the problem with the video is that although we're in a public place, I mean, it comes down to that fundamental definition of what's public, and we can all look at each other, the thought that your camera is showing or permanently archiving that these people are here might get them in trouble someday. You know, we might get into a world where having come to hope is the kind of thing that gets you into trouble.
I know everyone wants to leave, but can we rephrase it? There are a lot of people who think that if Google keeps throwing PR money behind this, they'll make wearable cameras cool and it'll be okay to wear a camera on your face all the time. Others suspect that it's impossible. They could throw infinity dollars behind it and people will always be creeped out. Are there certain things that just can't, people just will not and cannot get over?
It depends on what the value is. In Russia, everyone has a dash cam because there's a whole industry of fake auto accidents. You go to Russia, rent a car, within an hour, someone will have thrown himself or herself in front of you and be claiming the insurance. So it's automatic that you have a dash cam. If we get to a world where you have to document stuff, it's called surveillance instead of surveillance, right? My friend Steve Mann, professor at the University of Toronto, wears a camera. He says, I'm a cyborg. He tried to go into the U.S. embassy because he's American and register his child, and they said, take that thing off your face. And he said, I'm a cyborg. And they said, see that bench over there? That's where cyborgs sit until they take that thing off their face. Thank you very much, everybody. And I'll sign books in the back.